The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You've got this tug of war going on between the government and the Bank of England. That doesn't lead to a stable situation.
We must face up to the fact that for too long, our economy has not grown enough.
I'm prepared to do what it takes to get us through these difficult times, to get us through this difficult winter, and to come out stronger as a country.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics, your daily guide to the corridors of power. I'm Stephen Carroll.
And I'm Caroline Hepke. On today's programme, Liz Truss is the most unpopular Prime Minister since the advent of modern polling. Inflation reached a 40-year high in September, we learned this morning, and Conservative MPs may rebel if the party's pension promise is broken. Look, make or break, I don't think even does justice to today's Prime Minister's question. So we're going to bring that to you live in just a moment, Liz Truss and Keir Starmer.
But first, Liz Truss facing her MPs for the first time since she sacked her Chancellor, and her economic plans were obliterated by his replacement. I think we look at the scale of the U-turns so far under this government. We've had the tax cut changes. We've had the energy bailout being scaled back from 2 years to 6 months. Now there's potential talk, if you're reading the Financial Times today, about a windfall tax on energy and the potential for banker bonuses from banker bonuses being lifted, the cap, to potentially windfall tax on banks as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is the U-turns. That does mean that Keir Starmer may well be spoilt for choice. I really think that we might be on to watch out, though, for questions from Liz Truss's own backbenchers. What are they going to throw at her? In terms of that poll that I mentioned, just 10% of Britons have a favourable opinion of the Prime Minister, 80% viewing her unfavourably. That's the latest from YouGov. They also did a poll Monday and Tuesday of 530 Conservative Party members, and that showed that 55% of them said that she should resign, only 38% of her backing her.
And that's the question now being debated, is that how many Tory MPs will come out and say they don't back the Prime Minister, and will there be enough that perhaps Graham Brady, the head of the powerful 1922 backbench committee, may consider changing the rules to allow a confidence vote in the Prime Minister. Normally she's protected for a year after being elected. There's a question of whether or not the revolt against her may be so strong that they might change.
Look, the House of Commons is absolutely packed to the rafters. We're watching the images now. There is virtually no room on the benches, many standing. This is only Liz Truss's third PMQ. So, yeah, it could be a very, very difficult moment. Right, let's get into PMQs
it's going to be
now.
By Christmas. Is that the release date or the title?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I have been in office for just under 2 months, and I have delivered the energy price guarantee. making sure that people aren't paying £6,000 bills this winter. I've reversed the national insurance increase, and I've also taken steps, and we will be taking steps, to crack down on the militant unions. Now, what, Mr. Speaker? I think, Mr. Speaker, that is more of a record of action than the Honourable Gentleman in his 2.5 years in the job.
Mr. Speaker, last week the Prime Minister ignored every question put to her. Instead, she repeatedly criticised Labour's plan for a 6-month freeze on energy bills. This week, the Chancellor made it her policy. How can she be held to account when she's not in charge?
Well, Mr. Speaker, our policy is to protect the most vulnerable for 2 years. I had to take the decision, because of the economic situation, to adjust our policies. I am somebody who's prepared to front up. I'm prepared to take the tough decisions. Unlike the Honourable Gentleman, who hasn't done anything on businesses, he's done nothing to say he'll protect people after 1 year. He's got no plan.
Here's Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, last week the Prime Minister stood there and promised absolutely no spending reductions. They all cheered. This week, the Chancellor announced a new wave of cuts. What's the point of a Prime Minister whose promises don't even last a week?
Prime Minister.
Well, I can assure the Right Honourable Gentleman that spending will go up next year and it will go up the year after. But of course, we need to get value for taxpayers' money. The Labour Party has pledged hundreds of billions of spending pledges, none of which they've retracted. The Honourable Gentleman needs to reflect the economic reality in his policies.
Mr. Speaker, those spending cuts are on the table for one reason and one reason only, because they crashed the economy. And working people are going to have to pay £500 more a month on their mortgages. And what's the Prime Minister's response? To say she's sorry. What does she think people will think and say? That's all right, I don't mind financial ruin, at least she apologised.
Prime Minister.
I do think there has to be some reflection of economic reality from the party opposite. The fact is that interest rates are rising across the world and the economic conditions have worsened. And we are being honest, we're levelling with the public, unlike the Honourable Gentleman, who simply won't do it. And what is the Honourable Gentleman doing about the fact that workers, train workers, are again going on strike? The fact is, he refuses to condemn the workers. We are bringing forward policies. Mr. Speaker, we are bringing forward policies that are going to make sure our railways are protected, people going to work are protected. He backs the strikers, we back the strivers.
Mr. Speaker, she's asking me questions because we're a government in waiting and they're an opposition in waiting. There's no getting away from this. Millions of people are facing horrendous mortgage repayments. And she's admitted it's her fault. She shouldn't have conducted an economic experiment on the British public. But it's not just her. They put her there. They're keeping her there. Why on earth would anyone trust the Tories with the economy ever again?
I notice, Mr. Speaker, he's not actually objecting to a single economic policy that the Chancellor announced on Monday. He's refusing to condemn the strikers. We're on the side of working people. We're going to legislate to make sure we keep our railways open. The Honourable Gentleman refuses to do anything.
Here's Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, the only mandate she's ever had is from members opposite. It was a mandate built on fantasy economics and it ended in disaster. The country's got nothing to show for it except the destruction of the economy and the implosion of the Tory party. I've got the list here. 45p tax cut, gone. Corporation tax cut, gone. 20p tax cut, gone. 2-year energy freeze, gone. Tax-free shopping, gone. Economic credibility, gone. And her supposed best friend, the former Chancellor, he's gone as well. They're all gone. So why is she still here?
Mr. Speaker, I am a fighter and not a quitter. I have acted in the national interest to make sure that we have economic stability.
Prime Minister, order. Order. I'm going to hear the Prime Minister. I suggest that all members need to hear the answer. Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I am a fighter and not a quitter. We have delivered on the energy price guarantee. We have. We've delivered on the energy price guarantee. We've delivered on national insurance. We are going to deliver to stop the militant trade unions disrupting our railways. The Honourable Gentleman has no idea. He has no plan and he has no alternative.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through.
I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
James Grundy!
Okay, so that was the Prime Minister, Liz Truss, facing Keir Starmer. I mean, that was, you know, one of the liveliest Prime Minister's questions I think we've heard in many, many sessions. So you heard Keir Starmer going through the list of U-turns from the government saying, gone, gone, gone. And every time he did, the backbenchers behind him, the Labour MPs, chimed in there. Liz Truss had a very, very difficult job then justifying, you know, what the Conservative government has done, talking about being a fighter, not a quitter.
Yeah, trying to pivot to talking about the train strikes and how Keir Starmer hasn't condemned them seems very, given the strength with which we saw those attacks from Keir Starmer, him saying the Labour Party is a government in waiting, that the Conservatives were an opposition in waiting, and in his words, note that there was no getting away from the economic experiment that, in his words, Liz Truss had carried out on the British public. You know, interesting, yeah. Compared to, this is, as we've said, only her third performance as in PMQs. I think the first one, when we brought it to you here on Bloomberg Radio, we were saying how her performance was very solid and very assured, and she was engaging with the issues. Here we've seen her pull back from that. She wasn't.
She delivered the lines as strongly as she could, but I think that it's the weakness of the arguments that simply was kind of shining through. When Keir Starmer says, why on earth would anyone trust the Tories on the economy ever again? Fantasy economics. You know, he listed 45p tax cut, gone. Tax-free shopping, gone. 20p tax cut, gone. Economic credibility, gone. And the former Chancellor, gone. You know, very, very hard for her to make the argument against that. Although she did say that she was talking about acting in the country's best interest, delivering on the energy price guarantee. But even there, of course, originally the Conservatives' policy had been to support households with their energy bills for 2 years. Mm. That has been cut back by her own Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, to 6 months. And so even there, you know, that was an easier tackline for Keir Starmer.
Liz Truss coming to defend herself, though, with the lines that she had acted in the national interest, she says, that the party had delivered on the energy price guarantee and on national insurance, and now that their next target was to tackle, in her words, militant trade unions. Of course, that after the announcement, there'll be three more dates of rail strikes here in the UK in early November.
Yeah, I think it's an immensely difficult moment. Look, we were talking this morning about the inflation figure in the UK. You know, this is also where Keir Starmer has the attack line because, of course, mortgage rates have gone up to above 6% for sort of fixed rate deals, on 2 year deals at least. And the inflation figure now returning to a 40-year high in September, particularly fueled by food prices going up. So this is, you know, a very, very difficult situation, and it is going to make the government's finances even worse. We know that it's going to make delivering on the pensions guarantee and on increasing benefits even harder.
Well, you mentioned pensions. Interesting, actually, we are continuing to monitor the Prime Minister's questions as she's speaking, and she has now said the UK is committed to the triple lock on state pensions. payments. That's the guarantee that pensions will go up by as much as inflation, wages, or 2.5%, whichever is higher. That had been called into question when the Prime Minister's spokesperson yesterday, speaking to journalists, wouldn't rule it out that that triple lock, a policy announced under the Conservatives in 2010, that that could perhaps be in doubt. And there have been plenty of speculation over that this morning, whether that could be one of the sacred cows that would have to be slaughtered to rescue the situation right now. But we are seeing some clarity from the Prime Minister on that, saying that the UK is committed to that triple lock on pensions.
Yeah, it's a key constituency for the Conservative Party, of course. Even though it's less than £10,000 per year that the state benefits, it's immensely important. Having said that, by the latest calculations, if benefits and pensions are actually increased in line with September's inflation figure, and that would be the usual moment, it's usually based on the September inflation figure, then the government's total bill would increase by more than £25 billion next year. How would, you know, any government, frankly, fill that black hole? So that's why you've careened from tax cuts now to how do you balance the books, to cuts.
Let's discuss further what we've been hearing from the Prime Minister. We're joined by Labour MP John Trickett, MP for Hemsworth and West Yorkshire since 1996. Thank you for joining us, John, on Bloomberg Radio. What's your view on what we've been seeing in Parliament today?
Well, look, here I am in the Commons now, and it's good to be speaking to your audience and to you. The mood in the Commons was a Labour Party who, I think, felt outraged by some of the things which the Prime Minister said, and a Conservative Party who were quiet, looking very, very worried and nervous, and knowing that the Prime Minister's statements simply don't wash. For example, she said she delivered on the energy price cap, but actually she said the promise was a two-year cap. And so, as we know, it's gone down to 6 months. That is not delivering on a promise. That is breaking a promise. And so much of the other things she said were of a similar character. They've crashed our economy with a ridiculous ideological experiment. And the people of the country are paying the price.
Okay. In terms of what happens, though, there would be little choice. If Labour is a government in waiting, as Keir Starmer put forward in that PMQs, how would Labour manage the economy and save money? Because ultimately, that is going to be the position. Pensions and benefits increases and now surely in serious doubt. How would Labour square that?
Well, look, I think I'll give you one or two examples of what Labour said to help to show the difference. If you take the energy price cap, the six-month cap that we've just discussed, the Conservative government effectively would let the burden of that fall on borrowing and then on the taxpayer. What Labour said is we would tax the super profits, the extremely high profits, which the energy companies are making, in order to help to pay for the price cap. So that's a completely, although the people of the country will see a six-month cap, whichever party's in power, the way it's paid for is very, very different. And another example, I don't want to bore your listeners, is there's something called non-DOMs. And look, there are people who live here, work here, earn money here, but they're registered abroad in tax havens for the purposes of paying tax. Now, that's not right. They should be, some of the wealthy people, they should be paying tax here as well. So we would abolish the non-DOM rule. Would raise £3 billion a year. It's a significant amount of money. And those kind of examples
John, I appreciate you giving us concrete examples, but those are relatively small amounts of money that would be raised. When you're talking about £60 billion for 6 months, you know, if you want to try and extend that price guarantee, it's going to have to be a lot more money. So the question then becomes, how would Labour find that money? Does it mean tax increases? Does it mean spending cuts?
Well, you've just asked me to say what we would do, and I've given you two examples. And I think a fair-minded listener would say, well, they're examples of the kind of thing we would do. I think we're all waiting to see what the OBR says, the true state of the economy. And then I think our leadership will make some further decisions. Personally, if you ask me what I would personally do, I'm not speaking now for the leadership. I would tax wealth as well as income. In our country, we tax people's income, but we don't tax wealth. But as we know, wealthy people A lot of their income actually comes from enhancing the wealth which they have. I think we can't allow that to go on any longer. Let me give you one more example. If you earn dividends off the, say you've got £1 million in shares in a company and the company pays you dividends, you pay 7% tax. But if you work for a living, you pay 20% tax on your income. And you could level up that. And that is another example of the kind of thing which a bold Labour government might think about. As I say, I'm not speaking for Labour here. I'm speaking, this is my opinion.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. Look, interest income and inheritance tax and non-DOMs are all very familiar to our audience. So absolutely, we hear you on that. But look, polling wise, you know, I mentioned that the Prime Minister is now the least populist. It's sort of modern polling came into existence. The problem for Labour, though, is that you could be faced with basically 18 months of a zombie government. What are you going to do with that? And what does the country do with that? Why have you not, why has Labour not called for a vote of confidence in the government?
Well, just so that your listeners understand, a vote of confidence can bring a government down in Parliament, slightly different to the United States, for example. However, in order to get a vote of confidence through the House of Commons, a significant part of the majority have to join with Labour and the other parties. And I don't think at the present time that is likely to happen. And therefore, it might be necessary to put down a motion of confidence. That's a question of tactics. But at the present time, it isn't going to succeed. Look, our task is to continue to prepare ourselves for office. We've been through a period of opposition and we continue to oppose. But an opposition needs to do more than oppose. It also needs to propose. And so preparing for office, developing what I hope will be radical, transformative politics, which changed the way our economy works, is what needs to be done next. And I think we should use every single waking moment both to oppose, but also to begin to propose a programme for government which is realistic, which is costed, and which will not frighten the markets, as this lot have done.
Well, hang on a minute. It's either radical or it's realistic. You can't have it both ways. Keir Starmer surely wants, you know, the Labour government to be centrist. That's how he's positioned himself for weeks and months now.
Well, I'm telling you what I think, and I think that the state of the country and also the international markets are such that we can't go on in the same old way. And I'll give you, let me explain what I'm thinking is, if the idea is that you somehow resuscitate the economy, either here or across the globe, by simply fattening up people who are already extraordinarily wealthy and hoping the money will somehow trickle down into middle-income earners and lower-income earners, that ain't going to work. So a radical change will be to say we're going to build an economy from the bottom up and from the middle out. And it's middle income earners, the ones who perhaps have given the Conservatives a chance, who have now become so disillusioned with the Conservative Party. I don't see them voting for them again in a long time. So I think we do need to change the way we do things, but we need to do it in a way which is reassuring, which offers a sensible future, and which doesn't kind of spook people into believing that somehow there will be chaos under Labour, which there won't be.
What stage of election preparation are you at now? Are we at a posters printing stage, or is the party getting ready for an imminent election?
No, I think we want to see an election, and we want to see it done in an orderly way, which doesn't damage the economy and which gives expression to what the people think. You can't go on changing leaders, prime ministers, without asking the public. And you can't have new leaders coming in and tearing up the manifesto which they were all elected on. It's not right. It's improper. It's dishonest. And what people, I think, do want from leaders, they know that politicians can duck and weave, but they want basic honesty and they want a sense of decency and honour, and all of that's gone from the Conservative leadership. There's no honour in hanging on, pretending you're doing things that you promise, when in fact everybody in the country and across the globe can see that she's reversed everything she promised.
As you said, you were in Parliament just moments ago, John. I sort of want to go back to that. I mean, the Prime Minister is still speaking and the House is still packed with members. How long do you give Liz Truss as Prime Minister? What's your reading of that?
Well, it looks to me as though I don't want to call them wolves, but let's use that expression. The wolves are circulating, and I don't think it will be too long. I think that the backbench spokesperson, Sir Graham Davis, has let it be known that if a third of the Parliamentary Conservative Party submit letters of no confidence, then he will then proceed to tell the Prime Minister that that's the situation.
But does that happen before or after Halloween? Because the crucial date is surely the 31st of October. Is that the crucial date in your mind?
I'm certainly not in a position to speak for Conservatives, who I'm not the greatest fan of, by the way, as you might imagine. I don't know what they're going to do. But, you know, you see them in the corridors, you see them sitting for cups of coffee, you see them huddling. And I think it's quite unusual atmosphere in Parliament at the moment, where in corridors up and down the Parliament, there are Tory MPs huddling around, whispering in each other's ears. It does feel as though we're getting close to November the 5th, which your listeners may know was the plot to remove Parliament entirely. It does feel a little bit like it's getting terminal.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
The Bloomberg Sustainable Business Summit returns to London on April 25th for a solutions-driven look at the sustainable business and finance landscape, looking at the latest trends in ESG regulations, supply chain innovation and transition finance. Speakers include leaders from CDP, Emirates Environment Group, Seedtrace, COA and more. Summit advisors include City Commercial Bank, Red Sea Global and Schneider Electric. Visit bloomberglive.com/SBS2024 to learn more.